Coming up on the Mascot Wedding Show, we've got guest Matt Bearden in studio to talk about Punch, his weekly show. We also talk about the science of comedy and how Matt loves fingering ladies. All this and more coming up on the Mascot Wedding Show. Everybody, this is the Mascot Wedding Show, the Internet's Hour of Unspeakable Power. My name is David Hotta.
And my name is Mac Blake, and welcome to episode 264, The Boy Who
Couldn't Say No to Mozzarella Sticks.
That's right. We are recording from the Hodgecast Studio in Austin, Texas. I should not take a sip of soda right now because we're about to do a radio show. How are you doing, David?
I'm doing great. I have today off. So I've just been running errands, and the fact that I enjoy running errands on my day off makes me just realize that much more how much I hate my job. Because, like, I've enjoyed today so much just getting my oil changed and getting an eye exam. Like, I don't want to ever go back to work.
Doing stuff during the day, like just running around, back when I was, like, a student or whatever,
yeah,
it was like, oh, this is just something you do. And then once I became unemployed, once I graduated,
yeah,
and then I was officially unemployed, it was like this weird nightmare world where I was like looking around at everyone else who was just around during the day. I was like, why are you here?
Yeah.
Where'd all these people come from? Why aren't they at work?
But there should be like a reboot or a sequel to Ferris Bueller's Day Off where he's an old guy and he's just like having the time of his life getting new tires or something. Like that seems like it would be the most fun.
What about Ferris Bueller's Day Off too? Was called Ferris Bueller's Off Day, but he gets sold to some weird European tourist that want to hunt him for sport.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, we'll just make that.
Is he Cajun in this version?
Yes, he is. He's got a wavy mullet.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a, let me see, who could do the, what's his name roll?
The
Wolf of Brimley roll.
The diabetes roll.
Well, you knew who I was talking about.
We could get one of those M&Ms, right? One of those big chocolate candies and dress him up like Wolf of Brimley.
Oh. Thank you for specifying what M&M was.
Yeah. I didn't want to be confusing about it. Oh. How are you, Mac Blake?
I'm doing good. As David hinted, we are recording a little bit earlier than we usually do. Why does that matter? It doesn't, and nobody cares. But we have not one, but two very special guests.
Yes.
One person we are the guest of, Mr. Charlie Hodge, is going to be sitting in today. How's it going, Chuck?
Welcome, and thank you for having me.
Well, Hugh, this is your house. So do not worry about it.
Is it okay that he calls you Chuck or Chaz?
Sure, all of the above.
Okay.
Chucky, Chazzy.
Okay.
Well, Rich Miller calls me Chazbo.
Chazbo.
I don't care for that. And the person who does not normally live here, our next guest, you can hear.
That's not true. I do live here.
Oh, full fun fact.
Little fun fact.
Yeah.
You can hear him every morning on the Dudley and Bob radio show here in Austin. He also hosts the best comedy show, or best show, as he will say, in Austin, Punch. He's also an award-winning stand-up comedian, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Matt Bearden.
Yay!
Applause is awkward. I can see you all.
Well, you could have applauded, too. They can't tell you're not applauding.
Yeah,
we can applaud for myself.
It's a radio.
What an a-hole move.
We could have gotten 33% more applause if you had applauded.
Theater of the mind.
Okay.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm supposed to yes and this, aren't I?
No.
I was watching you all go at a rapid pace. I'm okay. That's it. I'm on the way over here. My car smoke started pouring out of the engine.
Did you enjoy the shit out of it, like David?
I didn't.
Oh.
I didn't.
You should get it fixed, man. That's where it's at.
Yeah, I guess so, but I haven't had that opportunity yet. I just started on. You know that thing where it's in your mind, like, oh, my car. You know how I'm going to handle this, right? There's smoke pouring out of my engine, so naturally I'm going to spend the next week or so hoping that smoke stops pouring out of my engine.
Yeah.
And then eventually I'm going to have to face the fact that, oh, the smoke's not going to stop pouring out of my engine. I'm going to have to go somewhere, which means then I have to go to find a mechanic, and then I have to, right?
What I usually do...
Do you handle your problems immediately as they are presented to you?
No.
If
not,
I have
not immediately. What I first do with any car problem is that I turn the AC off and I hope that fixes it.
Right, okay.
Just because I figure that.
Is the smoking engine the immediate problem, or was it the loom you knew you needed to get it fixed before it became a smoking engine?
No, I don't know. I mean, I just had the whole car serviced and they said, wow, this looks great.
Hmm.
Way to take care of your ingen. I got a, I'm pushing 150 on that ingen.
What?
Not anymore.
Really? You don't know my hip lingo?
No.
So what?
I got 150,000 miles in my car.
Oh, okay. Got it. What? First of all, what color is the smoke? And second of all, thank you for calling Click and Clack.
Are you making fun of me? Did you ask me a question and I answered it and now you are busting my balls the answer to your question?
I'm not busting your balls. I thought it would be a fun time to pretend we were the Mazzoli brothers. What were their names?
I don't remember.
The Fazzoli brothers.
Fazzoli.
They also own that fast food Italian empire.
I think they... Are you talking about the Sparrow brothers? Is it the Sparrow guys?
Yeah. What color is the smoke coming out?
I have no idea. I mean, it's smoky colored.
Is it like, it's not white?
Do we have a new pope? White?
Yeah, exactly.
No.
T-ball there.
It's it's a very fine smoke.
Okay, it's not like thick and black.
No, okay. Not at all.
Let that one sail by.
No, it's just enough where you can sit at a light and you go, holy, is that smoke coming out of the hidgen? Is that smoke coming out of the hidgen?
That's scary though. Yeah, I think for smoke, I might try and get that fixed right away.
I'd wait it out for a couple days.
I'm going to go a couple of days because it could just be oil on the exhaust manifold.
Yeah, exactly. Like something, it's just burning something off. Like it might be leaves for all you know.
Yeah, or maybe there's a cat in there. Sometimes cats will crawl up to keep warm in the summer.
Christmas dinner.
There you go.
Exactly.
So
manifold destiny.
During the 2-day waiting period, though, will you open the hood and look at the engine?
I just did.
Oh, okay.
No, that's right. Like, I mean, I just was looking at the engine, trying to decipher where the location of the smoke, but it wasn't doing it anymore.
Did you blow around, like, this sort of, like, to see if you could start any fires or anything like that?
I don't think I wanted to do that at all.
Well, I mean, look, if you start a fire, then at least you know something's wrong with your car.
It's not that kind of fire.
Okay.
It's not that kind of fire.
I thought you were going to say it's not that kind of car, which didn't make sense to me.
It's not a blowable
it
car.
It would have been a better answer, I think. It's not that type of engine. It's not a blow engine.
Yeah, it's post-blowing.
What you driving?
I have a Toyota Tacoma.
Toyota Tacoma, and how old is it?
I have no idea how old it is.
Okay,
I think it's been in my family for 7 years.
I thought you were gonna say 6 years. 6 generations.
No, it's an old car, but I love it. I can't. Every time I go to get rid of it, I can't.
Have you tried to get rid of it? Like what? How far have you gotten?
Not very far.
Okay,
not very far. I've had people offer me money for the car, when it's sitting in front of my house.
Okay, because Toyotas are good cars. They're never prone to smoking.
It's made from a particular time, has a particular engine that's very popular with people because it's known as a mega car.
Yeah.
Right. So people, when they see them used, will just stop and you know what I mean. They'll walk up, they'll knock on the door, and they'll say, "Hey, are you interested in selling that car?"
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll say, "Make me an offer."
Pretty sweet.
And most of the offers they've made me have been for more than I paid for the car 6 or 7 years ago.
So what's keeping you from selling it?
Because it's still a good car. Why would I? I am not a collector of items.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I use the term frugal. I believe other people would use the term cheap.
No, you're very much like a Native American. You use every part of the Toyota Tacoma.
I suppose. I rarely use the passenger seat.
Well,
there you go.
Then maybe you're not.
Spartan is the term I like to use for that kind of living.
Okay, that's where I'll go with it. I'm a bit of a Spartan.
Uh-huh.
So now that we've fixed your car.
Thank you.
So now where are you from?
I am originally from, I guess I consider myself to be from Austin.
Is that where you were, where you grew up, like went to high school and stuff?
No, it is not.
Oh, where's that?
I went to high school in Houston.
Houston.
I went to junior high in Louisiana. And in Houston, and I went to elementary in Brownsville and in Houston and Louisiana. But these were all moving back and forth. There's not a continual. I went to a different school every single year until I went to high school. Went to 4 years of the same school.
Happy now?
Well, I want to know what the reason was for bouncing around that much, if you can
foster
talk about.
Families.
Okay.
So
not true, but did make you uncomfortable.
I was going to guess your dad was a gypsy.
He was. It was. It was, you would move with parents as they'd move with jobs. Mm-hmm. And then my parents divorced because I was a terrible child. And then we moved. See what I mean? It was just like that. I would give you the whole story if there was some fun meat to it.
Right.
But it literally was just moving around a whole lot. Sometimes in 1 year, I would end up in 3 schools in 1 year. Some of it was behavioral, too. I had some behavioral issues.
Okay.
Speaking of behavioral issues, and I was not planning on doing any sort of delving like this, but do you think the fact that like you were in like a new school all the time, do you think that's when the comedy started? Were you like, I'll be a funny guy to fit in?
I don't know the answer to that. And I will tell you that the funny guy that I tried to be was just really a precocious cunt. Can I, is that, are you going to edit that out?
No.
No, that's fine.
Okay, because I
you can
have,
say it four more times.
I've really taken a very solid inventory of my life leading up to where it is now. And I can tell you that with no reservations whatsoever, that were the current me to travel back in time to visit the previous me, I would have joined in with all the other kids who beat the fuck out of me and insulted me. Because I just, I don't know, I did everything in my... You remember that kid in your class who did everything in his power to make it worse for himself?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was me. It was me. And I don't know how I somehow broke out of the mold and didn't just start working at Fry's, because I think that's where the guy usually ends up.
Yeah.
With his short-sleeved dress shirt and his snap-on tie. But, yeah, somehow I got out of it. And, MTV is sponsoring cups now. Sorry, very easily distracted, but
please don't tell people where my drink is from.
I'm not going to. I just see that you have a drink from a, probably, I'm assuming, a fast food location, perhaps.
Yeah.
And it says MTV Artists to Watch.
They'll figure it out.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know what that is. I don't know of an MTV restaurant, so
yeah. Did you eat at MTV?
No, but I wanted a soda. And I didn't want to get out of my car.
I'm not here to shame you.
So I stopped by a Taco Bell.
Oh, look at you.
Oh, that makes sense.
And I gave Taco Bell one. By the way, Taco Bell, there's one by my house. And it is
by design.
The closest restaurant. Yeah, I moved.
Who picked who?
I'm within walking distance. There's one right next to my, I say house, by the way, apartment. The closest restaurant, put that in quotes, next to my apartment is Church's Chicken. And I've not been there. And I wear that as a source of pride. It's However, delicious. I have been to that Taco Bell way too many times.
Uh-huh.
I have also, you know how like when...
Did you just scoff at churches and praise Taco Bell?
I think
that's
what he did.
Breath?
Yeah. It's a really awkward moment for all of us.
Well, no, because the racist in him is like, I'm proud of never been.
I know, but you know that weird shame when someone's like, I'm not, I mean, I drink a whole lot and I've ruined some relationships, but I'm not an alcoholic. And everyone's like, okay, yeah, okay.
No, I was making fun of myself because I was saying that like, there's this fast food restaurant that I could walk to, and I was like, no, I won't be tempted by that. But then I'll drive to a grocer fast food
restaurant. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you're setting levels like, oh, I'm better than this church.
Yeah, but I'm clearly not. Yeah.
But you are. I've been to that church.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's the worst service in America.
Well, it's not as bad as that Popeyes. Anyway.
now everybody's triangulating.
You know
where
you are. When junkies will tell you stories? Everyone here talks to a junkie all the time.
All the time.
And they'll have that moment where you're like, man, I was shooting some sweet heroin into my arm. I wanted some more, and some guy made me a price. He's like, I'll give you $200 for that baby of yours. And it's like, man, I almost sold my baby. That's when I knew I had to get clean. Like those moments of clarity or whatever. I've had so many moments of clarity when it comes to eating at that Taco Bell that I've just driven right past. Like the other day, I was in the fast food line and this older lady was in front of me and I only saw her old withered hand like stick out of the car and be like, give me my food. And seeing someone that old eating like Taco Bell, I was like, oh God, that's no way to live. What am I doing here? Nachos, please. You know, like just like right past it.
I'll have your finest Mexican pizza.
Yeah. Also, they have a, when you go to the order screen, the graphic on there says, the best decision you'll make today.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does.
That is bold.
I know, especially because it's the worst decision I'll make today by far.
They're assuming you're hungover and you woke up at 4, you're going to eat this and then go right back to sleep. So technically, it is the best decision you'll make all day.
For most people, I guess.
I'm sorry.
For me, it's the one I didn't want to talk about.
I mean, I haven't done a Taco Bell in probably 8 or 9 years.
Done a Taco Bell. That is the way to say it. Well, good for you, man, because it is...
There's no pride there, whatever. It's just a decision that I didn't even actually make. It just happened. But now I feel out of it, because I feel like that is a cultural reference. I'm certainly in the minority, don't you think, in this nation, because I haven't been to a Taco Bell in 8 years?
You still have a good grasp of what it is, so you can still reference it.
Yeah, but I don't know specifics, like
but
things
you've been
like...
there.
Yeah, I have, but I'm missing it. I feel...
I think most adults stop eating there.
Okay. Yes, they do.
I mean, I consider you to be a young adult.
No, I appreciate that, dude.
I mean, honestly, that was so, like, you can still eat it. You're there.
By the way, that high five that Charlie and I just had, which no one could see because we're on a podcast, reminded me that we are trying an experiment today. We are going to have a soundboard full of sound effects.
This can't fail.
It can't fail to be what? But yeah, I mean, in terms of Taco Bell, Yeah, I mean, you'll still get all like the dumb references people are talking about when they talk about like the Doritos Locos
sure,
tacos.
But I want to know things like specifically that some marketing asshat decided to put the best decision you'll make all day.
Yeah.
That's almost like they're admitting, yeah, it's just alcoholics and people who beat their children. That's who we're feeding. Do you know what I mean? If they're saying like really the best decision you're going
to
make is chips that you dip into fake cheese sauce that we call nachos.
Yeah, oh, man. But then you're
fuck, they're good, right?
God damn it.
Three sauce. Ingredients remixed and reshaped 100 different ways.
Right, it's amazing.
So I think you need to do some kind of like fast food tour to get your mind sharp, like in reference to all these things.
I don't know how my body would handle it. I'll be honest with you.
I know how your body would handle it.
Yeah, I give up. these sound effects, man! Did you see him rev that up?
Yeah. Yes.
That's like, he was fucking excited
he could
about
not
it.
Wait.
And he's blushing now. Well, he's like,
it didn't feel good.
No, are you sure?
It's like when you're playing Duck Duck Goose and you fart and you just wait for everyone else to smell in the ring and you're like,
I gotcha.
We grew up different. we're talking about sports.
Yeah, sure.
One more thing about Taco Bell. Another terrible thing that I saw on the drive-thru was, I probably talked about this on the show before at some point, but fuck it, the archives are numerous. There was a sign, and it was like, hey, come work at Taco Bell. And it was a triptych. They had like three pictures. Mm. The first one, it said, your work. And it had a picture of Taco Bell. And then it said, your friends. And then it had a picture of other Taco Bell employees. And I was like, right. Oh, that's grim. And then it gets worse. Has a picture of a Taco Bell manager, and it says, your future. And this was to get people to work at Taco Bell instead of, I don't know, eat a bullet. Or something.
That's like a weird like Orwellian kind of like dystopian future. It's like, all right, be a part of this. You'll be a part of it forever.
I really am just selling myself to Taco Bell.
That was actually the perfect one for that.
And we're back. So you're a busy dude. Matt Bearden.
I think I've worked myself into the category of busy.
You have got your fingers in a lot of comedy pies, so to speak.
It could have been way more awesome, I think, if there were a lot of hot comedy ladies around.
Yeah.
And what I mean? Like, that would sound like I'm a bit of a Lothario.
Yeah, if you had not said so to speak, it would have just been like he's doing a lot of finger blasting.
Yeah, that's the way it sounded to me at first, but that's not... I would love for people to believe it, but that's not my lifestyle at all.
Would you want a reputation as, this guy loves fingering people around town?
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. I'll be honest with you.
Finger's funny.
We'll edit this part out, and here, I'll give it to you again. So, Matt Bearden, you finger a lot of ladies. That's not right.
No. You gotta back it up on that one.
We'll roll with it. When did you start doing stand-up?
The long story, I'll give that one to you.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
First set I did was in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And how old were you then?
18.
Okay.
Ballsy. Ballsy.
Second set I did was in 1997.
Okay.
Took a bit of a break to reassess, really kind of fine-tune some of the material from the first open mic.
See the world, just get a sense of who you are.
When I came back to stage, I really wanted to, you know what I mean? I really wanted to work that original 6 minutes into something magic.
Why was there a 7-year gap?
The first set I did was so horrendous that I just decided I would never do it again.
That's the answer I was
And then
expecting.
I did another set in 1997 to audition for a television show. They were looking for stand-up comics. So I wrote an act on a Thursday afternoon, and on Thursday night, I performed that act. And I gotta tell you, it went amazingly well.
Awesome.
You all are performers, and you know that the best way to approach anything is to have zero experience in it, and then just to fucking go for it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but you weren't completely unfamiliar with comedy. You were doing improv back then, right?
Yeah, I had for about a month and a half, 2 months, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I had no business being on. Maybe actually it had been longer. Maybe it'd been like six months, maybe. I don't remember. I can't put dates together in my head. It's all just sort of a weird blur.
Is improv like waiting tables in a strip club Wait 6 months, you'll be dancing. So improv to stand up.
They all come back.
Maybe so. I have.
Think she's just gonna improv.
I have fairly fond memory. I did improv at a place called the Velveeta Room, which is a comedy club. They don't necessarily do it there anymore because there's more of a scene and a bunch of theaters and stuff here in town now. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know. I made the mistake. I didn't know that at the time, the stand up guys there at the Velveeta Room hated all improv people.
Yeah.
But I had
at
no,
the time.
I had no knowledge of this.
Yeah.
And so I would always just, I loved stand up. So I was always, I would stay, I would watch a bunch. I'd watch show. And so at the time there was a show on Friday and then two on Saturday, two on Sunday. And I would watch all five shows all week because I had zero friends. and no ladies. So I would just watch constantly. And then I don't want to brag, but at the time, I had a pretty good job. I was bringing down about $8.50 an hour.
Nice.
So I would buy shots for all the comics, because shots at the time were 50 cents there at that bar.
Man.
Nice.
Yeah.
Stupid.
And so I basically bought a bunch of friends, not even intending. I was just like, oh, let me buy a round for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think at first they were just like, let's fucking take this guy's money, because we hate him. And then I think accidentally, they were like, shit, we gotta be nice to him. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it really worked out. But I did that set in 97, and then I didn't really do stand-up again until about 2000, somewhere right around 2000 when I started.
But yep. That TV show, you got the part, it was Austin Stories, right?
I did, but not off that audition. Audition, they had no interest in me, and then the original writers, I don't remember the whole story, but I know that original writers were... the original three cast members were Howard Kramer, who is pretty prolific out in L.A. now, and a guy named Chip Pope also, and Laura House. I don't know how much Laura does anymore. And then they all had a writing team, and some of the writers were, there was a guy named Blanka Patch.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't know he wrote for that show. Yeah.
And then there was another guy named Patton Oswalt. I don't know if you know
what
who
he wrote
that
for that.
Is. Yes, but the way I was told the story, and I don't know this now. This was told to me by Howard a long time ago, because they were no longer on the show after a while.
Okay.
And he was like, yeah, the MTV kind of just said they weren't funny, which is always, though I love those stories where you're like, yeah, you're right. Clearly, guy's not funny. He's proven it with a terrible 20-year career. I think, or I don't know if he wasn't right for the show. I don't know. Or maybe he just got tired of it because he saw that it was going to be a dead ender or something. Yeah. I don't know. But there's lots of stories like that. When I was living in LA, I went to a showcase one night. They would do these showcases in LA. A management company with all the people that hadn't gotten picked up for pilot during pilot season. So they'd throw up nine stand-ups somewhere, and they would invite out casting directors or whatever from shows. Like, hey, you might have a show that's going on right now, and one of the guys isn't really working out, so come check out these guys, and maybe you can recast with somebody. And that night, it got crashed. The showcase got crashed. This guy went up at the end, and I was like, holy shit, this guy is hilarious. And then I recognized him because he had a show on MTV at the same time that I did, and he was on a show called Apartment 2F. And he played the Apartment 2F was the Sklar Brothers. Do you know the Sklar Brothers?
Mm-hmm.
And so the Sklar Brothers were these twins, and they lived in Apartment 2F, and they had this wacky, crazy, goofy guy, and I played the wacky, crazy, goofy guy on my show, so I thought, well, maybe we can hit it off and be friends.
Yeah.
And then I thought he had the best set of the evening. I was like, that guy was fucking so funny. And afterwards there was an agency type outside smoking, and I heard him talking to a couple of the girls that had performed that I thought were terrible, and he's like, definitely let me get your information, whatever. And then this guy goes walking across the street, and I was like, oh fuck, they're definitely, that guy's gonna run over there and sign him to like a $1 million contract.
Right.
It was so hilarious. And I remember the agent goes, see that guy? That guy should, whatever bus he came in on, he should get back on it and go home. He's never going to make it. And I was just like, oh, that's just so depressing.
What can I guess? Was it Denzel Washington?
It was Zach Galifianakis.
What?
Is that right?
Yeah. So I love that that guy also nailed. But I think that's the weird thing about, you know, I don't think in any of those things they were looking for talent. I think that what I learned from that is like, oh, these are put on so that guys who work in the business can scam chicks.
Can ball ladies, yeah, exactly.
I think that's what was happening with that whole thing.
There's so much about
pussy.
There's so much about pussy that's fascinating.
Hey, well, why not ask the guy who has his fingers in all of it?
By the way, that should have been how did you set that up? There's so much about pussy.
Yes.
It's like that couldn't have been a sound drop if I had edited it here. Hey. Oh, there's a falcon in the room, guys.
Get that out of that pussy.
Hold on. I'm going to fire a laser at it.
Wait a minute, that was the Falcon?
Yeah, that was
hit the Falcon again.
All right, we'll turn it up a little bit.
No, that's not a Falcon at all.
I think that's Matt's car.
Oh my god.
So this is just somebody who electronically made some sounds and decided, cuz that's not even a recording of a Falcon or anything. You can hear that, right? That's a keyboard.
Yeah, but what this is because I do a lot of sketch comedy, David and myself do.
Yeah.
I have this massive collection of weird sound files for sketches, also wigs and dumb props. And so I just went into a folder on my computer and just dragged like 10 files in here, including, I don't think this one will get used today. Oh, but what sound is it? That's a sword stabbing someone or cutting
off a body. That should be body fall.
Oh, wait, I have a body fall.
That should be shooting an arrow into an apple.
Wait, where did the body fall?
Your falcon
go?
Sounds like someone was about to stab someone in the movie, but then they got a call or something. It's like,
Gah! Right.
Yeah, exactly. A quick aside.
Victory. Yeah, that one was stupid. Anyway, sorry, we were talking about stuff.
Speaking of a collection of wigs and stuff,
yes.
I took my car to get serviced or whatever, and they also offer a free car wash, so I took it. And it's a full, you know, full thing. They go inside the vacuum and everything like that. Well, I have like a big pile of costumes and clothes and stuff like that, and tissues and bags and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So like they're clearing it out, and they leave everything that they think is good in a pile in your back seat. And I thought that was very nice of them. Well, one of those things that I forgot I had in my car is an orange prison jumpsuit.
Ah.
And I really wished I had been there to see their faces when they're like, ay, 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 what is this? Like, oh, and they were Mexican. Okay. So that's cool. That's on the up and up. But yeah, I really enjoyed. Now I just want to do that all the time. Just like leave like prison jumpsuits and dildos and stuff and just go get a car wash.
Prison yeah. and dildos. Odd you went to those two.
Yeah.
Well, I talk about what I know. So there you go.
Let's drill into this.
That was a poor choice of words for dildos.
We did a sketch one time where I, myself and another guy were Ku Klux Klan members.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had these Klan outfits that my sister made.
Adorable.
For your grandfather. For his birthday.
But they were in my car, and I was like, man, I got to get these things out of here. And then another member of our sketch group, Lance Gilstrap, was like, what if he got pulled over and the cop like saw him in the back, and he was just like, get out of here, brother. No ticket for you, brother. Keep driving.
My wife used to drive the truck that we have, right? Mm-hmm. We had a kid, and then I stayed home with the kid for a while because of the way my work schedule worked. And so she would take the truck, and then at 1 year at Christmas, she had all this shit in it that your kids give you. So she had a little Santa doll was up on the dash, and then a bunch of plants that the kids had brought her, and bags of cookies, just tons of shit that's just in the car. And I live over on the east side, and this is probably 5 or 6 years ago, and convenience stores on the east side are still hit and miss.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You never know the interaction you're going to have with another human being. Generally, it's rarely super positive.
And you could put human being in quotes.
I guess I could. Well, I don't want to paint a picture that's not highly, I mean, you know what I mean? Get back out. So I was just there when, you learn that after being in a neighborhood for a while, I'm not visiting. I've lived in the neighborhood now for a decade.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a weird thing that people do to try to intimidate, and you just, once you push back, you realize everybody usually goes, oh, fuck, they're from around here, maybe. So this guy came up, and he was like, hey, and he was trying to do I need 40 cents for the bus, and I was like, well, first of all, the bus doesn't, I was like, which line are you trying to get? And he's like, well, I'm trying to get the bus right there, and I was like, yeah, I know, but which number bus are you trying to get? And he's like, man, I just need to get the bus. I was like, yeah, I know, but I know what line goes right there. And if you're going, I want to know where you're going to know if you're actually getting changed for the bus.
Nice.
Like, which line leaves from right there? And the bus doesn't cost 40 cents, right? The bus costs $1. You're trying to get a day pass. And I was asking him questions. I was like, so where are you headed? He was like, well, I'm getting the one right there. I don't know what it is. I was like, well, which direction are you headed? Where are you going? And finally he goes, yeah, get all hard with your badass Santa doll on a dashboard. And I looked up and realized that my wife had this cute little stuffed Santa moose thing. And I was like, ah, fuck, I can't win this argument now. I'm the guy. He thinks I'm the guy that drives around with a Santa moose on his dashboard. Uh-huh. This story was way more hilarious when it happened to me.
No, but I mean, you ultimately had the upper hand because now he's not getting 40 cents from a guy with a Santa
you
doll on his
You don't
truck.
Know how life works at all, do
no,
you?
No,
I
at
don't.
All.
I didn't win that at all. He left knowing that I'm the guy with the Santa.
I thought you were going to get carjacked. Fuck it. Fuck the bus. Get out.
See, but that's the thing.
No, I'm not leaving my car.
Well, allow me to play David's advocate.
Nice.
Thank you. Why didn't you just, when he is like, hey, do you have change? Why didn't you just say no?
That's how I said it. No.
Okay.
That's the original.
But then he kept pressing?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, you have to be always ABC.
Always be closing?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was trying to get a set of steak knives.
See, I still find you to be the winner in this transaction. I mean, unless he ended up with your 40 cents.
He ended up with no money.
Okay, that's great, because like he got the business handed to him by you. No offense to you, but if you're driving around with cookies and stuff and he's not getting 40 cents off you, this rube, you win, man.
There's no way he didn't feel stupid at the end of
it. Yeah, exactly.
And you're rocking
Santa bobbling there.
Like, yeah. Using that to call you out too, like, yeah, with your Santa doll, like, I'm with Santa doll.
I still feel it. I guess I feel like I lost that one. But I think that comes from maybe never going to the same school.
Actually, what part of Houston are you from?
We did it.
We delved dope.
Delved dope?
We delved dope.
Well done. Well done.
God, I didn't want that sound.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I'm trying to delve some dope. Do you know where I can go?
Could that soundboard have a longer delay, but from the time that you toggle a sound effect to the time it comes on?
We got to cut those files.
I don't know. I don't have a pro soundboard. Just hit
anything. Watch how long it takes. You hit it now.
Flawless victory.
See, now we talked over. Yeah. It's the Dick Around 5000. It really, there's nothing professional about it. We're just hitting buttons.
Yeah. It's better than iTunes, which was the previous
thing. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, guys, SoundCue. This program is brought to you by SoundCue.
I grew up in far northwest Houston, near a town called Tomball.
Okay.
I grew up in an area called, I think, Bammel is the official name, or Cypress.
See, so we're a lot closer than you think, then.
Oh, really? Are you from the Cypress neck of the woods?
Spring. I went to Westfield.
All right. Well, yeah, you're way over there, then.
Yeah. Way over there. It's all a big town.
Still 30, what is it, like 35, 40
minutes?
Yeah,
but that's like Houston close. Like,
right, that's true.
I have a hard time explaining to people when they complain about stuff in Austin. It's like, oh, I got to go from 183 to 35. It's like, that's nothing. That's no big deal. But like in Houston, if you wanted to go see your friend, you had to drive for 20 minutes.
This town does change you, though, because there are times when I think I don't want to go all the way over there. Mm-hmm. For like, take the Cap City Comedy Club. Yeah. Right? It's a club we all know the reference, right? And it's from downtown to Cap City Comedy Club. Once you get on the freeway, it's about 7 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
7 minutes. That's it. People are always just like, I just never go up there because it's so far out of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 35 minutes to drive to high school in the morning.
Yeah,
every morning,
exactly.
Because I was on the very edge of where you might remember a school called Klein Forest.
Oh, yeah.
And I could basically see it from my house. But I went to another school called Cypress Creek, which was, it was about 35 minutes from there. So
that was the new one. Like, they had built that and they were just trying to get kids over there, right? Or am I misremembering?
No,
that?
You're thinking of something else.
Okay.
Because you have to be younger than me, I would assume.
Oh, I'm much
younger. 30s. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good heavens.
Much younger. Also smarter.
Yeah. Houston. That's it. All right. That's all I had.
We did it, guys.
We did it.
We try to fit in Houston every show.
Do you really?
No.
I do.
It just happens.
Well, do me a favor. Sing a couple of bars of Houston from Glen Campbell, if you don't mind.
Oh, honey, Houston. Houston means that I'm one step closer to you.
Wrong song, but thank you.
No way.
Yes.
What song was that then?
That was a different song.
That was Houston by somebody else then.
Yeah.
Are you thinking of Galveston by Glen Campbell?
No, he has a song about Houston.
Well, let's hear it.
I don't know it, but I know that that's not how it goes.
There once a time in Houston land where it was traveling long.
Glen Campbell.
It from That's it. Your home over to Four Longs. That's where I got my fish and chips.
God, I love Glen Campbell.
Was he English?
Yeah. He also did that other song about Houston. Come from the land of the ice and snow.
That's it.
Yeah. That was his.
Fucking love that guy.
He was prolific.
Glenn
Talented.
Mumford. So now, Matt Mayo, you started Punch at some point.
I did. I started it maybe two weeks before my daughter was born. So I always know how old my daughter is by remembering how old the show is.
Happy anniversary, daughter.
Right. Well, you have to know which of those two things is more important to me.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be the show.
Well, the show's actually doing great, though.
And the show actually provides me some enjoyment in life, so the show wins. That's probably absolutely true, not completely true.
Punch, though, quickly grew into, like, this, like, marquee show in Austin. I mean, you've had, like, who's been, like, Hannibal Buress has been on the show?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about, like, big, widely, nationally known names... let's see. There is that Hannibal Buress character, Al Madrigal, Kumail Nanjiani. What are other names? Pete Holmes
is on the show.
A lot of those guys. But you know, and I don't want no disrespect to those guys because they're always great. But the whole point of starting punch was to prove to people that there are just as many capable lesser known names. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. That's what I was going to ask you about. But also, it's a show that when people are like unfamiliar with the Austin comedy scene, like, oh, you know, like, is there a show that down there I should do or this kind of thing? It's like, well, Punch is a great showcase. But what was the impetus for?
The impetus was I was having to leave the road because I had an agreement with my wife that I would stay off the road for a while when I had this kid, right? And I had a 90-day job, actually, in Charlie's old seat, the radio show he used to work on. And so I was basically employed for 90 days. And I was trying to figure out what the fuck am I going to do with my life and take care of this kid and all that. It was kind of it was a little freakish. And I started that show, and it was supposed to run for 6 weeks. And Margie, who runs the club... they used to just throw, I don't want to say throw up, but I think that, in my opinion, how about that? Like, well, I got to always be careful of whose feelings are going to get hurt because everyone's very sensitive in the city. But in my opinion, shows were done differently than I would have done them. That sounds like a politician, doesn't it?
But fine. Take the politician's route.
So I always just thought, like, here's how I would rather see a show go. I mean, I've been doing stand-up or been involved in it for 8 or 9 years, and I had seen what I thought were a lot of horrible mistakes with how where I thought, lazy is a strong word, but I feel like there was just a way of doing things and nobody questioned the way things were done. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I saw that it was pretty bad in this city. Most of us there was just 2 open mics at the time, and most of the people got up, and the audiences were kind of bad, and we responded by just shitting on that audience. And I never thought that that did much good for anybody or any parties involved. So we decided to start a show, and I just asked everybody, I'm not telling you you can't do any new material, but I'm asking you to do the best possible show you can. And then when people, I got a little self-righteous, and when people didn't do that, I just didn't rebook them for a while. At the end of the 6 weeks, we were doing pretty well, so they asked us to stick around for another 6 weeks. Then the contest came around, they said, how about doing another full season? And that's how the sort of seasons thing began. Do you know what I mean? Because now we run 3 seasons. I know I got my balls busted a lot about that, where people, I think that was done as some kind of hoity-toityness or whatever. It just started that way, and it runs, and I've noticed that it actually runs better doing that as well.
I mean, you are kind of cracking the whip on this. You do want people to bring their best material, and because of that, I get the sense that Punch has developed this reputation as when someone gets booked for Punch, they get a little intimidated, like, I have to bring my best stuff because I'm on Punch now. Good. Okay.
Good.
There's no, like, fear of success where it's like, hey, come on, guys, you don't have to take it this seriously. Like,
not at all. Wait, here's the proof in the pudding, right? When I go do other shows now, I see spillover. People that I know started coming that weren't stand-up fans, who started coming to Punch, became fans, and now I see them at other shows because they've found acts that they're really into, and they go check out the rest of that stuff. But I think we kind of built fans, and I hate to be too scientific about it because it's still at the bottom of the day. Not a saying at all.
Bottom of the day, Charlie?
It's the end of the day.
Well,
if you stack all the hours up.
It's a colloquialism. If we were in the main area,
I'd be okay.
Yeah, bottom of the day would be preferred.
Look, in the bottom of the day.
At the end of the house, we all know what you're saying.
Exactly. Thank you. So when all the pussies have been fingered.
Excellent work.
It is. When I would talk to people about stand-up, people my age, I have a very clear memory of this. A friend of my wife saying, stand-up. And that's like, I don't know. I feel like that's a thing my parents do. Mm-hmm. It's a thing that my parents would go see. Because she was asking me questions about, well, like, why do you do stand-up? Well, but can you make any money? And at the time, I was like, well, yeah, that's how I make my entire living. It's how I bought this house. I make a living performing stand-up. And I'd had television credits and stuff like that. And she's like, yeah, but you're not really a professional though, right? Like, what do you do? Like, I mean, her idea was, you're either Brett Butler or Jerry Seinfeld, or you don't really exist.
Yeah,
that you're just amateur hour at that point. And I was like, well, how do you fight against that?
Did she ask you if you do your own material?
Yes, absolutely. Do you do your own material? Do you do like what artists' jokes do you do? I remember that was a question that I've gotten from people, like, that they just think, like, oh, when you're starting out, you just, you know, like, you're a cover comic.
Yeah.
I'm a cover comic. You know, I do a lot of. Mainly Rosie O'Donnell's material from her. So that's and that's part of the reason that I named it a name that was not, because the club wanted to make it like Matt Bearden Presents or something.
Okay.
And my takeaway from that was, oh, if people don't like you If they've already seen you and they don't like you, that becomes a problem,
right?
Right? Or if they don't know who you are, do they really want to take a chance? Mm-hmm. Because I've found that people, when I would talk to them around my age, they would go take a chance on a band that was playing at, say, Emo's at the time. Mm-hmm. Because they knew, like, all right, Emo's books a certain style of music-ish, you know, at least in some kind of vein. And so I can go there and hang out, and even if I'm not totally enjoying it, I go and have some drinks, whatever it is, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And but people would say, I would hear people would say, you know, I've seen stand-up. I went to go see stand-up once. I don't think it's really my thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, really? You don't like the laugh? That seems so weird. But I think what they were saying was, I saw a stand-up act, and I didn't like that act, and I don't know anything beyond that. There's no Rolling Stone magazine of comedy. There's no other way for people to learn about stand-up. Yeah. So the whole point was, let's start a show. And I still had, even a year in, people would who were regulars would then eventually say, well, what's your name again? Because they wouldn't even know the names of anybody. They just knew that it was a consistently good show. That was the whole point of it. I've made this too long-winded. I can tell from your faces. Hit a falcon or something.
Done.
God damn it.
I waffled. I was like, is there a better sound than falcon? We haven't used this one yet. Oh, have we?
The thunder rolls. Well, no, I mean, I don't want you to think that you're talking too long about something because, I mean, it...
Sorry, David. That's all the time we got. Gotta get out of here.
No, I'll always give room for if you're passionate about something, and it sounds like you're passionate about this show, so why not talk about it at length?
It's been hard for me to admit that I'm passionate about it, because I like to pretend that I don't care about anything.
Of course.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Isn't that cooler to not really care? Isn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Caring is creepy.
It makes your accomplishments that much more impressive. It's like, man, could you imagine what he'd be doing if he cared about something?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the city was actually founded on that when they were like, hey, Stephen F. Austin, we're going to name the town after you. He just made that jerk-off symbol with his hand. And then through half-lidded eyes, was like, whatever.
That's the statue.
So I actually like that whole that show a lot. And my favorite part about that show is I think that some people are beginning to take that model and reuse it around the city.
Yeah,
you know?
I am.
Yeah, and do you know how happy that makes me?
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah, and it's weird because I was talking to Duncan and Brendan, who run another great show called Sure Thing, right?
Sure Thing, and free every Saturday at Austin Java.
That's right.
Put the plugs in there. And because I think maybe one night Brendan had said something about it, like, oh, we were worried that you would think that we were ripping you off. And I was like, no, first of all, I can't. It's just this town can really benefit from lots of good shows.
And you didn't invent comedy booking. Like,
I did not invent it at all. In fact, the entire show that I have is just stolen. It's just stolen ideas from things that I would see or shows that I wanted us to have. We didn't at the time. There were shows like Eating It, Invite Them Up. I think there was I forgot.
Make Them Laugh.
I don't know. Make Them Laugh.
They wish they were just brought back.
Is there really a show called Make Them Laugh?
Where the person sits on stage and comics try and make them laugh to their face.
But those two are showcases that were in New York and in L.A. had Comedy Bang Bang, but at the time it was Comedy Death Ray.
Right.
And so these different showcase style shows, and that was part of it too, is that I thought, well, let's put some effort into booking, because I think what a lot of clubs would do at the time, you would always the opener. Is always the guy who has the least amount of experience, which I think is retarded. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense to me that, like, here's the guy who's going to set the tone for your show, the guy who is fucking scared to be on stage right now and doesn't have the skills to deal with these people who are getting nachos and getting their drinks and are having a hard time, like, focusing and shutting up and preparing for a show.
Yeah.
Let's just throw this guy at him. And I think that that's a horrible way, because then people have just become accustomed. We're just going to ignore the first guy.
You know, I didn't bring you on this show to give you a slow, sensual blowjob, but I will say that, like, watching you host
Hang
Punch...
Hang on a second. Yeah. Hang on a second.
Am I going too fast?
And a bit more sensual.
No, but watching you host Punch, it was something where it did give me an appreciation for hosting. Because, you know, like, they say a lot of time, like, oh, and you're taking the bullet, or that kind of thing when you go up first, even if you're not hosting. But it was something like you do a very good job of like getting someone who is mentally arms crossed, like, I don't know about this, to at least, you know, they're ready for the show. And
right. It
definitely is a skill on its, especially in like the, even the like improv theaters here in town, it's a skill that's not, as honed as it should be.
Right, and I think it should be more. I think even stand-up houses or any improv that you said, I don't know why you wouldn't eat that. To me, if you were in a, I don't want to use the wrong terminology and get in trouble. Do you use is it an improv company? Is it improv troupe?
Troupe.
Okay,
yeah.
So. I don't know why, you know, when they usually get together and it's like, let's get five or six guys together. What is it? The model for improv, successful improv, is what, one hot girl, one talented guy, and five guys that want to fuck the girl that the one talented guy.
I thought it was five white guys in glasses.
Yeah, it is. Five white guys in glasses.
Pretty much what it is these days.
But I don't know why each, they wouldn't say, let's make sure to also have an incredible host that's part of our our group of five or six or whatever.
Like a Cold Town Theater. Which is I consider one of my comedy homes. I love that place.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, that we'd spent all this time like, because I took improv classes there. And when it came time to host, it was just like, oh, okay, who wants to do it?
Right.
Like that kind of thing. There wasn't, it was something where people sort of had to figure it out on their own.
Well, I will say that all of my hosting skills came from my days in improv when I would host for my troupe or whatever. It all stems from there. And I hate that I'm good at it because I despise doing it, and now that is all I am asked to do anymore. I get calls weekly. Will you MC our events? Will you host our event?
Mm-hmm.
And I despise doing it. I loathe doing it.
But you get paid to do them?
I do. Well, that's what I do now. That's how I make it happen. Is I charge a tremendous amount of money to do it.
Yeah.
I try to turn people off from me by throwing out a ridiculous number, and it's starting to backfire on me because now more and more people go, okay,
raise it.
Yeah, and it's right. So now that's what I do each time it starts to become sort of successful.
Get it
I
so
start
high
to raise
you
it.
Can't say it like without looking down at your feet, like $5,000.
I probably should do that.
Yeah. Oh, we're coming to the end of the show. Before we get to plugs, we got to get you out of here really quick. I have one quick question. What was it like transitioning from just another Joe going up to now you're a show booker?
Affects friendships.
I don't feel like a booker at all. I think it has affected friendships, but not on my part at all. Like I don't.
it's their fault.
Yeah, but I'll be honest with you. Absolutely. Like, I don't feel any differently about human beings. I don't book my show around friends. I don't. Yeah. I have people on my show that I don't get along with off stage or outside of the club. But I think that they're really good for the show, and I think that and I appreciate what they do. Mm-hmm. I also have friends that are my close friends who I still have never booked for Punch because I don't think that they're right for that show. And I think some people take that as that I have judged them to be unfunny, which is I'm not that judge. I'm not the president of show business, so it doesn't matter really what my opinion is. I'm just the president of my one show, and I know what that audience likes, and I know what works for that show. And then some people don't get, too, that I book a headliner, and then I literally think of all the headliner's jokes, and then I start booking, like, who would be a good setup for that person and their jokes? And then when I have that next person, then I say, okay, now who makes sure that doesn't step on those jokes? Because I don't want comics having to go, oh, fuck, I can't, he does a similar joke, I can't. So I sometimes go, well, that guy's here, and then I need a guy who's low energy before him, and then I need three high energy guys, and so that's how I'm filling out that bill. And so sometimes you're a character, let's say you're a low energy comic, well, there's only certain spots for you, and then you can't do this particular week, and it's like, so then it ends up pushing you, and I think some people take that personally, and it's the nature of how I booked that show. I think that and so I'm happy to hang out with anyone. Anybody can talk shit about the show. I was very sensitive about it at the beginning. I would get my feelings hurt about things when people would say stuff. Now I kind of feel like the proof is in the pussy, as they say.
Yes, and, they do say that. Yes.
And the show does well. It sells out every week. People are really happy. I see people afterwards. They don't talk to me. They go to other comics to talk to them and say, you're my favorite comic. Never hurts my feelings. That's the whole point of that show, and that excites me. And so I no longer have any reservations about how it's being done, right? Which is probably turning me into a bit of a monster, but it's also, you know, I would have people that would gripe about how long I would open. I would take too long hosting. And my whole point of hosting was I'm waiting for all the first drinks to go down. I'm waiting for people to shut up. If somebody's on their phone, I'm waiting until they kind of are done with it. You know what I mean? So sometimes, and then sometimes I can listen and tell, like, oh, this crowd is not really warmed up. So I will kind of talk until they get settled in and warmed up. And then that's when I'm done hosting, if that makes sense. And so that's been my reasoning behind it, and I'm okay with that.
I've got one final question, and then I'll let you go. If Punch has a mission statement, let's say it does, have you achieved it yet, or is there still something you want to do with Punch?
I would like to make it, I would like to go one, I don't want to go bigger with it, and there's a couple of other things, but I will say that it has achieved its original mission statement. Mm-hmm. How about that? And that's why I think, like, now it needs to, something needs to change about it.
Okay.
Because otherwise, is it publish or perish?
Sure.
I just feel like it's going to, I have no interest in running the same show for 5 fucking years, mm-hmm. and we're almost there. We're almost at the end of 4 years, and it just seems like a lot of time. To just do the same thing. Do you agree? Mac, you've been involved with the show. Do you?
You own it and hire someone else to run it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's not a bad idea.
Never, ever get rid of it.
Well, I mean, part of me thinks that, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But also, you got to keep it fresh for yourself because, you know, as long as you're keeping it fresh for you, you stay one step ahead of the general public's boredom, I feel.
Yeah. Well, and I think that part of it is that we're going to start to see some of that general public boredom,
or when they start not boredom, but like they start taking it for granted.
Apathy.
Maybe, maybe. And so I don't know. I just feel like there may need to be a few changes. And I would like to also do some bigger things with it. I'll leave it at that because it is a sensitive topic.
Sure,
yeah, we'll see. Punch returns September 10th.
That's right,
at 8 p.m. And you can go to punchcomedy.com for more information and lineups and tickets and everything. Matt Bearden, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's clap.
Yeah.
Hey everybody. We would like emails from you guys. Send us emails. We want to talk to you. We want to hear from you. How are we doing? MascotWedding@gmail.com. We're on Facebook/MascotWedding. We're on Twitter @MascotWedding. Nothing else to plug, I don't think.
MascotWedding.com has got full show archives and information about our various night jobs and side projects. And
what do you got coming up, Mac? Like,
Jazz Cigarette is the 2nd and 4th Monday of September, and also September 27th, I will see you in Dallas at the Texas Theater where Lee Harvey Oswald got caught.
If I would like to step on your plugs, yep, and just say I did your Jazz Cigarette show for the first time last night.
Super fun.
It made me really love stand-up again.
Oh,
and I hadn't been enjoying stand-up for about a year, and that was fantastic. It was a great room. It was a great show. I had an absolute fucking blast.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah,
it probably helps that I left before
that
it
helps
was over.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's always a solid show.
I had a great time. Great time.
Sting faces really soured that bitch. keep on fingering. Charlie Hodge, thank you for sitting in and also letting us stay here. Oh, thank you, Falcon, for alighting on my shoulder.
Fairly well, Falcon.
Fairly well.
David, how should we end the show, sound effects-wise? Should we fall down a well? What should happen?
Gosh, if we could fall down a well, that'd be great.
Okay, well, I guess I'll see you later. Yeah.